Unfortunately, due to technical difficulties, my homily for this weekend did not record in its entirety. So the first part will be from the homily given in the church, and the second part will be what I re-recorded afterwards, so that you can have the fullness of that homily.
So we can tell that there's a changing of the seasons as the weather gets colder. We can also see, even in department stores, the changing of seasons as Christmas items are already being put on display. Jesus talks about the changing of seasons in our gospel passage today when he mentions the fig tree and points out that when they recognize that it's sprouting leaves, that the people know that summer is near. It's a changing of seasons. But Jesus uses this example of the fig tree to remind the people to keep watch, to be aware, to see the signs of the times, to recognize what's going to happen. In our gospel passage, Jesus talks about and prophesies two things: the destruction of the temple, as well as the end times, his second coming. Christian prophecy often has multiple levels or layers of meaning, usually something in the short term, a short-term fulfillment, but then also more of a long-term fulfillment. And our gospel passage prophecy is no exception. In fact, if we look at sacred scripture and we look at the passages immediately before the one we just heard in our gospel from Mark, then we would see that his disciples asked him about the destruction of the temple. And then Jesus tells us the things that we hear in our gospel passage today. He mentions the days of the tribulation. And then he mentions how the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. And the stars will be falling from the sky and the powers of heaven will be shaken. The tribulation in the short-term fulfillment would be the siege of Jerusalem starting around 65 AD. Where the destruction of the Temple of Jerusalem took place in 70 AD. It was great tribulation. With the siege, the people in Jerusalem suffered greatly. They couldn't go out, they couldn't get food, they were starving. It was a terrible experience, a terrible time, a terrible tribulation. For the Jewish people, they believed that the temple would last until the coming of the Messiah. Although the Jews who did not convert didn't believe that Jesus was the Messiah, and Jesus had already come. They believed that with the coming of the Messiah, there would be the destruction of the temple, because the Messiah would then have the end times and the glory and the kingdom that he would bring with it. But Jesus did come already. So the fact that the temple was destroyed in 70 AD was not an issue for the Christians, but it caused a lot of confusion for the Jews. We hear, they will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds. If we look at the Acts of the Apostles, St. Stephen, as he's being stoned to death, sees the Son of Man in the clouds. We also hear, this generation will not pass away until all these things have taken place. Well, Jesus died around 33 AD, and the destruction of the temple was 70 AD. And for the Jewish people, a generation was 40 years. And so Jesus, his prophecy in the short-term fulfillment took place. The destruction of the temple happened within the lifetime of his disciples. It happened within those 40 years. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. The temple was believed to represent all of creation. And so if the temple is destroyed, that's as if heaven and earth are gone or pass away. But also, Jesus is saying that his words, his prophecy, is more certain and more sure than all of creation. But why was the destruction of the temple, why did that even take place? Well, the temple was the center of their Jewish faith with regards to their temple sacrifices. The Levitical law has all sorts of sacrifices. How are we to relate to God? What are we supposed to do? All of these rules and all of these sacrifices, that's how they're in relationship with God. But if the temple is destroyed, what then do they do? How do they pray? How do they offer sacrifice to God? How are they pleasing to God? Well, the Messiah had already come, and he established a new covenant. And that's what we hear about in our second reading. We hear about these priests who offer sacrifices again and again and again, and they don't do anything to take away sins. That's a reference to the Levitical priesthood, the Old Covenant priesthood. And in the letter to the Hebrews, we're told that Jesus comes and he offers one sacrifice, once and for all, the gift of himself on the cross, a perfect gift of love made to the Father on our behalf that makes up for all of the sins of all of humanity for all time. And Jesus establishes this new priesthood, his priesthood. In this new covenant, the priests are to be Christ for the people. Not just a representative, but to be another Christ. To stand in the person of Christ. The sacrifice that takes place at this altar is not a different one. It's the same sacrifice made present to us again through sacramental signs. Christ's sacrifice on the cross, the altar of the cross, made present at this altar in our church building. So that we can participate in this sacrifice, so that we can have the grace won for us by that sacrifice applied to us here and now.
So the destruction of the temple marks the transition from the old covenant to the new covenant. The new covenant having already been established by Jesus Christ when he was here on earth almost 40 years prior to the destruction of the temple. But at this later date, an opportunity, a chance for those Jewish people who had not yet converted to transition to the new covenant in accordance with God's plan. By eliminating the temple, the old worship through sacrifice has come to an end, and it's an invitation for them to enter into the new celebration, the new worship of God, the one and only sacrifice of Christ that's made present for us again through the celebration of the Mass. We might wonder then, what does our gospel mean, or how can it be understood in the long-term fulfillment? Well, if we examine it, Jesus says that there will be this great tribulation and that there would be all sorts of cosmic things going on in the sky with the sun, the moon, the stars, the powers of heaven. And all of that will precede the second coming of Christ in glory, where the Son of Man comes in the clouds. And he's assisted by the angels. We might wonder, though, okay, if this is how the second coming takes place, if this is when Jesus comes again, the end of time, what then does that phrase about this generation will not pass away? How do we understand that? Because it says that it won't pass away until all these things have taken place. How is that possible? When we say generation in this sense, we are referring to the generation of the church. We are referring to the phase or the establishment of salvation history between the first coming of Christ and the second, where he initiated his kingdom, which is already present in one sense, but has not been completed or brought to fulfillment until his second coming at the end of time. And so the church will then persist until the very end. It will not be destroyed, but it will remain for all of humanity to be drawn to Christ prior to that second coming. And of this second coming, the day, the hour, no one knows, neither the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father, meaning that it is only the Father to know when this will happen exactly. But Jesus tells us to be aware of the signs. So what does that mean? It means that we can see the things, the events that lead up to the second coming, though the exact date is uncertain or unclear. The exact date is being reserved, but we can see the things that happen beforehand to help us to know that the end is near. The second coming of Christ will happen soon when we see these things. We hear about the second coming of Christ also in our first reading from the prophet Daniel. It talks about how Saint Michael the Archangel is going to arise, and there's going to be this battle, and that there's going to be a time of unsurpassed, that has been unsurpassed in its distress, as in a great tribulation, like what Jesus has already told us. And that only those who are found written in the book of life, only those who are being faithful to God, only those who are following him as he calls us to, they shall escape this great distress. They shall be spared of tremendous suffering. And we also hear in this prophecy in our first reading that many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake. Some shall live forever. Others shall be in everlasting horror and disgrace. We understand this particular passage to be a reference to the resurrection of the dead, which we mention at every Mass in the Nicene Creed. We declare that we believe that at the end of time, when Jesus comes again, we all get our bodies back, that our souls are reunited to them. And for those who lived a good and faithful life, for those whose souls were already in heaven, for those who followed Christ and are written in the book of life, they shall live forever, living in heaven, in God's presence, where not only their souls but also their bodies will enjoy being in the presence of God. But we also hear about an everlasting horror and disgrace, and we understand that to be a reference to hell, that those who refuse God's mercy and his love, those who refuse to follow his commands, those who do not want to be with God forever in heaven, who separate themselves from God by serious sin, the only place for them is a place where God is not present, where they will be forever without seeing him face to face and as he is, where they will be devoid of his mercy and love, and where there will be everlasting horror and disgrace. And so, as we approach the end of our liturgical year, the end of our season of ordinary time, and as a new liturgical season, Advent, is approaching us, we turn our attention to the end of time and to the four last things. And those four last things are death, judgment, heaven, and hell. We're all certain that we will not be able to leave this earth alive, that death is true for everyone, perhaps with the exception of those who are still living when Christ comes again in glory. But even if we die before Christ comes in glory, death is still going to be there. And what happens when we die is our particular judgment, where we individually, personally, by ourselves, are in front of the God of heaven, and he tells us our final destination. And our souls will enjoy heaven, if that is where we are sent, or our souls would start to suffer in hell if we had rejected God through serious sin. It's also possible that we would have to take a detour through purgatory, which is not a place for all eternity, but a temporary place where we would be cleansed and perfected for the joys of heaven. And those are the final things, the judgment. But we have that general judgment too that we heard about in the prophecy of Daniel, where everyone gets their bodies back. That's only at the end of time. And everyone gets to know where everybody else ended up. And God will reveal through salvation history how he has been at work. So death, judgment, heaven, and hell, the four last things. Heaven isn't guaranteed. It's offered, it's encouraged by God. He invites us to be with him forever. But we, through the way that we live our lives here on earth, answer that question of, do we want to be with God forever in heaven? If we want to say yes, then our entire lives should say yes. A yes with every moment of our lives. A life constantly seeking out to glorify God. A life free from all serious sin. A life lived in a way so as to be united ever more closely to our Lord here on earth, so as to be with him forever in heaven. But if we choose to live our lives differently, if we choose to live a life of sin, if we choose to reject God's commands and live in a different way, then we are refusing to be with God in heaven. And when we say yes, the more intense yes we say with our lives, then the closer we will be to God in heaven, the greater share we will have in his glory, in his love, in his joy. And to those who reject God, the more they reject God, or the more intense no they say to God's invitation, the more they will suffer for all eternity in horror and disgrace. So we have this opportunity to recognize the four last things: death, judgment, heaven, and hell. Let us live our lives in pursuit of relationship with God in heaven by starting that relationship with him here and now on earth, if we haven't already done so, and continuing to live a life striving to say yes to God's invitation to be with him forever in heaven. So let us reflect how we can say a greater yes to God as we continue to celebrate the Most Holy Eucharist.